Hello, this is Tamiko Faison, your host for Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color, a podcast dedicated to showcasing therapy around the world and supporting them in their roles. Today, I have a family member. I think this is the second time that I have a family member on the show. This is my aunt, LaQuanta Hobbs. She's my aunt, but let me just say that she is younger than me by not a lot, just 1 year. She is 1 year younger than me. And I'm going to read her bio, and then we're going to talk today about mental health. This is a little different podcast. So this is not an occupational therapist, but a mental health counselor who sometimes also is referred to as a therapist. LaQuanta was born and raised in Dudley, a small town in eastern North Carolina. She continues to reside near the area. LaQuanta has been married for 21 years. Congratulations. And has two daughters, ages 19 and 9. Family pets include Chewy, he is so cute, a two-year-old Shih Tzu, and a gray one-year-old tabby cat. LaQuanta graduated from the University of Mount Olive in 2004 with a bachelor's degree in human services and a master's degree in mental health counseling from Capella University in 2017. LaQuanta worked in community mental health for 13 years and has been a therapist since 2018. She says, I was drawn to the helping profession because of past trauma and therefore felt I had an obligation to share the knowledge. I've learned with others, some of the best helpers have suffered the greatest pain. And I think that's very true. LaQuanta is a licensed clinical mental health counselor and a licensed clinical addiction specialist and is currently a contract therapist with New Dawn Psychiatric Services. She takes a holistic approach to her counseling by focusing on the relationship between the mind and body with an emphasis on managing symptoms by changing distorted behaviors through meditation, yoga, and challenging distorted thoughts and beliefs. LaQuanta says that the mantra she uses to focus her mind is to live like nobody is watching. Wouldn't that be so free, just live like nobody's watching? She says, so often I think we live our lives based on what other people want, very true, and believe instead of focusing on what makes us happy. So this reminds her to live her life the way that she sees fit and what works best for her and her family. A few fun facts about LaQuanta. She says, being the youngest of 8 kids, everyone always looked at her as a child, no matter how old she was. She says, I remember thinking none of my siblings will ever really see me as an adult. And you know, maybe that's not a bad thing. She says life can be very serious and that she finds that by exploring her playful side, she is able to create a sense of balance. As an adult with many responsibilities, she says it is important to decompress. She says, my daughter and I often turn up Alexa and dance like nobody is watching. I will initiate an improvisation with my family just to have a little fun. Oh, we used to do that growing up.
Yes, we did.
Turn it up, dance, Soul Train line, all of that.
Yes.
We are still doing it. My kids look at me sideways. They don't want to join. Every now and then, they want to join. For the most part, I'm on the dance floor in the kitchen. Sometimes it's by myself. Like you said, dancing like nobody is watching.
Yes. You feel so free. I don't know what it is about dancing, but it just makes me feel so free.
Eating, dancing, and music.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
We were able to get this together. We've been talking about it. Like I say to most of my guests, I mean, everybody typically is, you know, they're doing a lot of different things.
Right.
So I'm always appreciative whenever a guest can fit it into their schedule.
And
I did read your bio, and I would like for you to just tell us in your own words about how you decided to go into mental health counseling.
So I was working in community mental health, like I said, for about 13 years, but I wasn't a counselor. So I was doing, you know, crisis intervention. I was doing community support, things like that. And my clients would tell me, you know, when I would talk to them, you know, doing case management and things, they say, you seem like a therapist. Are you my therapist? And I'm like, no, I'm not a therapist, you know? And I started thinking about it, you know, how long I've been, you know, helping others. And I was like, you know what? This is my calling. I think this is where I'm meant to be. So it took 13 years of me doing, you know, case management, crisis intervention, community support, all these different things. And I realized that my calling was to be a therapist. Like, that was where my heart was, you know?
That's awesome. And that is something we talk a lot about on the show. And I also talk when I'm consulting with therapists. from different backgrounds, sometimes occupational therapists, but also therapists who are part of the allied health professions, as well as mental health therapists, is that you got to really do it for the calling. And that really helps you to go back to your why whenever things get challenging, because they will get challenged.
That's true. They will. And like I said, I've always helped people. I've always had that type of heart where I just love helping people. I like to see results too, but I just love helping people. And so it just seemed natural for me to go into that field. And like I said, I've been through trauma myself, and just knowing the pain that comes with that, you know, and I'm like, you know what, if I can help somebody else get through this pain, you know, walk through this journey, you know, with them, you know what, that's the least I can do, you know.
And so let's talk a little bit about that. I don't want to necessarily go deep into the trauma, but how do you feel that it helps you? Because you said, you know, if you could help someone else, and I've heard people say that, and I've also heard people say, well, it's too close to home.
Yeah.
Is there a way that you set up boundaries because you had trauma in your past, if you're working with people who experience or are experiencing or have experienced similar traumas in their past?
Yeah, I definitely have to set boundaries. You know, I have to recognize that their issues are their issues. I'm there to kind of guide them and help them along the way. But I think trauma makes you a better helper, is because you know pain. You know what it looks like. You know what it feels like, you know, so it's empathizing with them is so natural, you know, because you felt it. You know how people always say, well, I understand, but sometimes you really don't because you've never been through it. Mm-hmm. But because I have been through it, I understand what that feels like. And sometimes I share, you know, parts of my story. I don't go into detail, but I let them know that I've been through trauma. You know, if I can get through it, you can get through it. These are the things that have worked for me. So, you know, we have that, you know, that ability to be able to work together because of what I've been through, you know, just trying to help them get through.
You know, one of the key things I think that you just said, you said that you've been through it and it's like you're healed from it. And I wonder if people who have difficulty with it, like the healing hasn't necessarily taken place.
Right. It gives them hope, you know, mm-hmm. and motivation. Like, wow, if she's been through this and, you know, she's done this, maybe I can get through it.
You know? She's been through this and she's healed.
Right. So it's like,
Yeah, you can go ahead. Were you going to say?
Yeah. No, I was just saying, it just gives them hope, right? That maybe I can do this, you know? And it kind of normalizes the situation. So they feel like I'm not the only one going through this. Somebody else has actually dealt with this before and came out on the other side, mm-hmm. you know?
I think that's so important. And sometimes in professional settings, it's taboo to share. And I think, like you said, a lived experience is a form of expertise. Another OT and I were just talking about that on last week. Yes, research is a form of expertise. They're all different types. And a shared lived experience is also one form of expertise.
Oh, yeah. It's almost the best, right? Experience is the best expertise.
It's a good
That's what I've noticed. Yeah.
Now, I don't know the diversity statistics for mental health counselors, but I do know there are disparities in mental health mm-hmm. with people of color.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, have you seen, you know, can you talk about that in your work? Do you notice any disparities related to the population that you're serving? And thoughts about diversity in terms of the people that you serve?
Well, I was going to say, the people that I serve, what I've been seeing, because I've been doing it for about a year, I'm starting to see more African-American males, which I thought was interesting because I thought, if anything, I would see more African-American women because, you know, men are less likely to see treatment. But I've noticed that I'm starting to see. It's probably been over the past, I want to say, 4 months, right? And the majority of the people I see are Caucasian, but I do have some Black women also, but I actually have more Black men than I do women, which
and
is
what
different.
Do you think, why do you think that, or what do you think is contributing to more? I definitely have my thoughts, but I'm just, what do you think is contributing to increased Black males seeking counseling?
That's a good question. I wonder, you know, part of me wonders, you know, are we just talking about it more as a Black community? Are we talking about, you know, maybe normalizing therapy a little bit more? You know, I'm kind of thinking of it myself. Why men? And like I said, the men that I've been seeing, I will say some of them have been dealing with a lot of grief, and they've been dealing with it for years and just put off seeking treatment, you know, because they felt like maybe they needed to handle it all by themselves, you know, being a man, feeling like they didn't need help. But yeah, I wonder too, I don't know if it's just the environment of what's going on right now with COVID. I feel like in general, people are feeling a little more secure in seeking treatment because they can say, you know what, well, I have anxiety, which they probably do because of everything going on in the world. So it's kind of normalizing it a little bit, I would say.
That you make a really good point. I do see a lot more about mental health. As difficult as 2020 has been, I think that's a positive thing that's come out of it. Mm-hmm. Is that people are learning that it is okay to not be okay and to seek help and have a support system around them to, like you said, be vulnerable about anxiety or depression. I mean, there has been a lot. We had COVID. We had Capitol attacks.
Yeah, a lot.
George Floyd was murdered. We had, you know, kids coming home and not being able to go to school. There's just a lot. And death. Right. A lot happening. And so I am appreciative of the fact that mental health support and counseling and services is being promoted more so than I think I've ever seen it promoted
before. Yes. And so they're normalizing it in a sense, you know, because it's not as taboo. You know, it's like, okay, you go to therapy. Okay, I do too. And some of my clients even tell me, they talk to some of their coworkers and they tell them the great experiences that they've had in therapy, and they're trying to normalize it just even in their own environment, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so speaking of, like, you were talking about grief, because that is definitely something that, you know, I messaged you about this before we even started, because we're coming up on the anniversary of your mom and my grandma's transition, and I call it transition, and everybody has different beliefs, but that's my belief, that she has transitioned. Right. And it's very, it can be very difficult to deal with that grief, as well as other grief that people might be dealing with right now. Mm-hmm. What tips, and I know you can't counsel right now, but I'm just curious, like, general tips do you have from professionals as well as just the general public, and particularly people who are working in these helping professions, in order to be more mindful, to help deal with the grief, to be present, to manage all the different things that are coming at them on top of being a person of color,
right?
Because this could be applicable to anyone, but this podcast is entitled Therapy, Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color. And we know that people of color have other things that they're dealing with on top of things that the majority, so to speak, is dealing with.
I know, you know, what I help for me, and these are some of the things that I talk to my clients about, is just really just feeling what you need to feel, you know, accepting all those feelings and just recognizing that, you know, you are going to be sad at times. You need to sit with it. You can't run from it, right? Grief is one of those things that if you don't tackle it, it will tackle you. Like, you have to, you know, you have to sit with it. You know, I remember days when I felt sad, and I remember saying to myself, I don't want to feel this way, because I'm not a person that just is sad, right? I've never dealt with depression. And so it was really hard, and I wanted to just push it down. But I knew from my training that if I did, it was going to prolong the grieving process, right? There's healing and feeling. You have to feel something to know it's real. So that means I got to sit with those sad feelings, you know? And at times when I was happy, I would get, you know, almost kind of like I was, you know, it was hard for me to feel happy because I was worried about, oh my gosh, I should be sad right now. Why am I happy? So I would question every feeling that I had. But, you know, you feel what you need to feel. If you are happy, you feel it. If you're sad, you feel it. It got to a point where I would know when it was coming because I'd felt it so many times. And I would just remind myself, okay, you got to feel what you need to feel. You got to sit with it. That's how you process it. You know, your brain is trying to figure all this out. That's one of the biggest things I would tell anybody. Just sit with it. Feel what you need to feel. Take as much time as you need. Grief is no one size fits all. You know, everybody's different. That's, you know, something that I would definitely say, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking about all the, like the wisdom that you just shared with that. I think you said healing is in the feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you are a person who is used to being the strong person, right?
Yeah.
It does not necessarily fit your narrative to break down and feel the sadness. But I agree with you that there is healing in the feeling, and that there are days, and I anticipate this coming up, that maybe I would just cry and just that's what it's going to be for today.
Right. You accept it and you just recognize that's just how it's going to be. Now, when you cry all day, you don't know. You might cry for a while. You might, you do whatever you need to do, you know? And if you feel better that day, that's okay too. You know, you do what you need to do.
And so at what point would you say to someone, okay, now it's time to seek help? Because this whole, you know, the crying, the anxiety, all that can be like very natural feelings and maybe even healthy for in some cases. But at what point would you say, okay, now you need to seek out help and support for this process, for these feelings?
I think if you're having trouble navigating through the stages of grief and you notice yourself just feeling depressed, you're not motivated to do anything. So even though I was grieving, I was still able to get up and do what I needed to do, you know, get my daughter ready for school, you know, do work, do all these things. But I would have periods during the day where I was sad if you're not able to function, that's the main clue that you need help. Like if you can't function, right? You can't get through the day. You don't want to get up and get dressed. You know, you don't want to get your kids ready for school. You're not eating, you know, you're having trouble sleeping, just not able to really function. You know, that's when you definitely need to get help.
And that would be for like the feelings of sadness and also even anxiety, right? Like we may have fear that come over us when we think about
right.
Like when I think our capital was attacked. The feeling that might come over me, but if I can still function and it's not where I'm like, you know, in the house and feeling like I can't go out at all because of these anxious feelings, you know, those are two.
I was going to say with grief, but with anxiety, I would say it's a little different because people can kind of hide their anxiety. Sometimes there's so much going on inside that you can't see. And so sometimes they can still function, right? If we're talking about anxiety, but the anxiety still may be overtaking their life, right? They worry constantly, you know, they're having trouble sleeping. It's hard for them to focus and pay attention to what they're doing. You know, they're not able to focus on their job and maybe they're irritable, different things like that. So if you're starting to have some symptoms like that, I would say definitely seek help, you know? Because like I said, anxiety is not something you can always see. Because some people with anxiety look perfectly fine. Sometimes they'll think they're perfectly fine. But then you notice that, okay, I can't concentrate. You know, I'm having trouble remembering things. I'm very irritable. You know, I'm on edge. You know, just feeling not quite like yourself, a little off balance. You know, there's nothing wrong with seeking outside help.
I'm glad you made that differentiation because I hadn't even thought about it like that. But that makes sense because whatever is happening mentally can also affect you physically, right? So if you appear like you're doing your normal routine, but your thoughts are overtaking you and they're anxious thoughts, heart rate could be much higher. Things could be happening to you physiologically that could then in turn cause, which makes me just want to do a reminder to anyone who's listening to check in with people right now, your friends, your family members, because it could be just like what LaQuanta said. I feel so funny calling you LaQuanta. I won't say what we call you.
I know,
on a podcast.
Yes, I know.
You have people in your circle that look like they're doing fine, but you know, maybe just if you ask the question, text, check in, call, you may find out that they're not doing as well as you think they are. And we all could use a little more compassion and support these days. Yeah.
And you were saying checking in. It's also important for us to check in with ourselves. I don't think we do that enough. You know, it is great to check in with other people, but do we ever check in with ourselves? Because sometimes there's things going on with us and we don't even realize what's going on. You know, what does it look like when I'm doing good versus when I'm not? You know, it takes a little self-awareness too to be able to recognize when something's off. You know, so we got to check in. Am I okay?
That's you know what I'm saying? Powerful. So would you say you would just sit with yourself and say, hey, LaQuanta, what's going on with you? Are you okay right now? And then you kind of reflect on behaviors and things that you're doing to say, okay, I might be a little off and I need to take some time off. I need to get my support together.
That's exactly right. Right. That's exactly right. Just kind of check in with yourself. And I think you have to know what it looks like when you are okay. What does it look like when I'm okay? What does it look like when I'm not okay? Right. So you can see the difference. What are my triggers? Right. What are some things that cause me to worry, to be stressed out, you know, to feel off balance? You know, what are those things? Right. So it takes a level of self-awareness to be able to check in with yourself. I tell people that all the time, because how do you know when to check in?
That's so deep. And would you say that you ask people in your circle? Because do you ever have a time? Okay, my husband will say this. Mm-hmm. He'll say, something's wrong. And I say, nothing's wrong with me. You know, I'm fine. And really, there is something. And he might pick up on it even before I pick up on it. But maybe I'm just a little bit on edge about something.
Watching from the outside. That's how he picks up on it. You're in it, right? And so maybe you've never sat around and thought about, because a lot of people don't, what does it look like when I'm doing good versus what does it look like when I'm not? Remember, you got to have that level of self-awareness to be able to recognize it. And he's watching from the outside and has watched from the outside ever since you guys been together, so he can see it a lot quicker than you can.
And so maybe when someone from the outside notices this, is another cue to check in with yourself.
That's right.
They're saying this. This is obviously a person that cares about me, that loves me. They're saying this not for me to, you know, be defensive, but they're noticing a difference between the okay and the not okay. Maybe I need to sit and check in with myself to say, why is it that I, you know, am showing some type of behavior that is making someone close to me question?
Right. And a lot of times it'll be like, you know, maybe we're a little more edgy, you know, we're a little more irritable, just kind of short with people. You know, those are indications too that something's probably not right, you know, because we're not normally like that every day. Most people aren't. And so when you start to become that way, maybe, you know, somebody picks up on it and they can let you know, hey, something's not right, you know. What's going on with you? But you're right. We do have a tendency to want to be defensive when somebody says that, because it's like, I'm okay. Like, right. There's nothing wrong with me. But really, he's actually helping you out because he's noticing something. He's like, babe, something's not right.
Right. You know? Right. Exactly. So what self-care tips would you give? So I have declared September as Self-Care September.
Okay.
That's my own declaration that I've decided that I'm going to do some different things to take care of myself in September. I've been going like nonstop the past probably year and a half. I've done some things, but I've just had a lot. But you know, like I won't say it's been any more than anyone else. Like everybody's had a lot over the past year and a half, but I have a few milestones that were completed past month or here in August. And it's like, I'm just going to really do it up in September. Do you have any self-care and mindfulness tips? I know in the bio we mentioned yoga and
Yeah. So self-care, let's look at self-care as a priority, a necessity, not a luxury. It's not something that you just need to do every once in a while, right? Something that you need to do on a consistent basis. And so self-care for, you know, everybody's plan is going to look different, right? There's no one size fits all. And so I know for me, self-care could be, it is me changing my diet. We've been doing that lately, eating right. Right. Because we know that, you know, eating all these foods with preservatives and all the sugar in it and stuff like that can cause, you know, especially people that already have anxiety and depression, can cause the symptoms to become unmanageable. Right. It can kind of exacerbate the symptoms.
So true, but it tastes so good. But you're right.
It does. The fun food. So I'm realizing to eat for fuel and have some fun stuff every once in a while. So I'm trying to do that, because with my anxiety, if I eat too much of that stuff, I notice that it gets out of whack. Mm-hmm. And when I eat better, it's almost like it's non-existent. So I'm like, wow, there must be something to this, you know? Exercise. Yeah. I was going to say exercise is another good one for me, because it helps relieve stress. You know, you can make it a family thing, you know, taking walks with your family, going on hikes, whatever. You know, if you want some time alone, you know, it could be listening to music. Sometimes before I take a shower, that's what I do. I'll go in the room, and my husband knows when I turn on the Alexa, he knows what's up, right? He's like, I'm not going to mess with her. She's having her me time. And I'll listen to music before I take my shower, while I'm taking my shower, when I get out. And that's just my time to kind of decompress, you know, and I do that. I didn't always do it for years. I never really did self-care. But now I realize the importance of it, because it builds resilience, right? Life, everyday life just has stress, and some of the stress is just avoidable. It's just everyday stuff, you know? And so when you do work on yourself and you do have those self-care plan that you implement, it makes you more resilient to that everyday stress. So that's why it's a necessity, you know, not a luxury.
I agree 100%. I will ask, though, what advice do you give to people? I'm guilty. I am guilty of saying self-care is the luxury. Hone in, do all this other stuff, and then self-care break. And so I'm glad that you said it's not a luxury. This is something that you need to do all the time. So I did say that I'm going to do like Fridays
Yeah.
Want a better job about not working on Fridays. But I've noticed that even when I say it, sometimes I will somehow, here comes two or three meetings Friday morning. Okay, let me just put this one in. How do people who are, you know, not good at having that type of balance, any suggestions for helping people to incorporate that into their routine so that it is a necessity and not a luxury?
Maybe better planning, right? So if you know that you're going to have meetings throughout the day, maybe set your self-care time and day around a time that you're not really doing much, you know, so planning ahead, just making sure, right, okay, I know during the day I'm busy and I know I say I'm not going to take meetings, but I always do. Is there a point in the day where I'm cutting this off, right? And maybe I can center my self-care around that. So just planning ahead to try to figure it out.
And see, this is why it's so good to talk with someone who has expertise in this area. I mean, just the accountability and the conversation is enlightening to think about other ways. So, yes, maybe on Fridays, I won't take the entire Friday off, but maybe at least by 4 o'clock every day, I have scheduled self-care time. So I like that advice. Anything else you would like to leave with our listeners about being a therapist of color? Going out and changing your career as a mom and a wife. And I mean, just these guests are just super amazing people. Any advice? Advice or words of wisdom that you would like to leave with the audience as we are talking about making your mental health a priority, having good self-care, being mindful, any advice related to that?
I will say, you know, mindfulness, you did talk about that. I feel like that's really important because it's all the time.
Can you repeat that? I think it cut out.
Okay. I said, you know, mindfulness, I know you talked about that. And I did want to mention that, you know, being mindful just means your mind and body are in sync and you're focusing on what's in front of you. And so many times we get lost in our head, you know, and we're, you know, like I could be talking to you right now, but if I'm worried about what my daughter's doing in the other room, I can't really receive the information that you're giving me. I can't really process it because my mind is somewhere else. You can't do both at the same time. And so we miss out on a lot of good information. We miss out on the present moments when we're not just being present. And it's hard for a lot of folks. I know for years I lived inside of my head. And so I speak of what I know. And so what I learned was the present is so much better, right? I remind myself all the time, you know, in this moment, I'm exactly where I need to be. That's what I remind myself of when I start going to that unknown place, you know, worst case scenario type, worrying about things that I don't have any control over. I bring myself back to the present because I realize, okay, this is better. When I go down that rabbit hole, you know, and get too far ahead of myself, it causes a lot of stress. So, you know, just learning how to bring yourself back. And like I said, that has a level of self-awareness, just recognizing when you're worrying or what, you know, recognizing your triggers and learning how to bring yourself back to the present, focusing on what's in front of you, having control over your mind and not allowing it to control you, basically.
Yeah, and we had a conversation one time, I don't know if you remember this, where I'm saying, yeah, that happens to me, and then I don't even realize that it's happening, and then time has lapsed, and that's when I know, I'm like, oh, I was just thinking about this for too long about something
else.
And you mentioned, if we can maybe end on that tip you gave me, if you remember this tip where you said, it was something like, what do I see? What do I hear? I forgot what you called it.
Yes, the grounding technique.
Yes. Can you leave us with that grounding technique? Because it is very helpful.
Yeah. So the grounding technique, you tap into your five senses and it's 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You can do it in any order you want to. And, you know, so I can start with five things I can see and I'm just naming what I see around me. You know, four things I can hear. I'm listening for whatever I hear. Three things that I can touch, you know, and I'm touching these three things around me, and you just keep going on and on. And so basically what it does is it takes your mind and puts it in the present, because your mind can't do both at the same time, right? You can't worry about what's happening next week if you're focused on what's in front of you. Your brain just cannot work that way. So it's like a distraction, and it just brings you right back to where you need to be, just focusing on what's in front of you, because you're just focusing on everything around you, basically picking out everything that you see. I love it too, everything you hear, you know, it's amazing. But like you were saying though, you said sometimes the time lapses and you don't realize it. So that's why I was saying you have to have a level of self-awareness. Like, what does it look like when I worry? What do I normally worry about? what do those thoughts look like? You have to be able to recognize them to be able to bring yourself back to the present.
You really do. Journaling does also help me with that.
Yeah.
Like you're saying, when you think about how did I spend my time today?
Yeah.
Oh, I went in a daze for 30 minutes. You know, and I was supposed to do this, but then I got off
track.
Or maybe I did too much today. It was way too much. Yeah. I didn't get a chance to eat because I overbooked myself and I wasn't organized and I didn't plan.
Yeah. I mean, I've done it when I was driving. I know everybody do. You drive and you're like, how did I get to this place so fast? I didn't see anything that I normally see. It's because you were inside of your head.
That's so true. You're like, I don't even know how I got here. But I mean,
I give that example all the time when I tell people about what it looks like to be inside of your head, because they're like, what do you mean? And then when I say that, they're like, oh, I've definitely done that.
We're guilty. We probably all do it at some point, but it is definitely a good reminder from the tips that you shared to continue to work on ourselves and make ourselves a priority, especially at such a time as this. I mean, they're just on and on about all the different things that seem that like they keep happening in our world. Many reasons to sit back, definitely serve and help people, but also remember, like you said, to take care of yourself too and check in.
Yes, make that a priority. Because we, you know, growing up, I think, you know, we teach our children, which is good. We teach them, make sure everybody else is okay. Check on your friend, you know. But nobody ever teaches us to check on ourselves.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever even thought about like, hey, check in. Hey, how are you doing, Tamiko? To actually ask
myself that. And then you wonder why people focus on other people so much and how they feel. It's because we're kind of conditioned to think that way.
We really are. And that's a lot I liked in your bio when you said, like, live your life like nobody else is watching you, because we do so much. And I think it's even harder with social media. Where we are looking at what everybody else is doing, and it makes us want
our lives there.
Yeah. And most people post, and I know I do, I'm usually post positive things. You don't see all what's going on. I might share every now and then, but for the most part, nobody really knows the true story of what's happening with other people. That's why it's so important to know yourself and focus on what it is that you are called to do, and making yourself a priority and taking care of yourself so that you can help other people, because you're really going to be effective when you are taken care of.
That's so true. I tell my clients that all the time. I'm like, how are you going to make sure, you know, your mom, your brother, your sister are okay if you're not okay? It's not being selfish. It's self-preservation. You know, I got to be okay, you know?
Okay, so that's what we're going to end on. It's not being selfish. It is self-preservation. So on that note, we are going to end the show. Thank you so much, LaQuanta Hobbs, for being with us today. I will put a link to your profile, because you're on Psychology Today, right?
That's right. Yep.
The link to your profile in the bio, and check it out. She definitely knows what she's talking about. Y'all for listening, and don't forget to follow. Until next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.